All right, Rabbi, say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Tzadik Ches 98. A lot to do today. A beautiful daf. It's always a beautiful daf. Beautiful daf ahead of us today. We are picking up, actually, on the last line of Tzadik Zayin Amud Beis 97b. Our shir this morning is dedicated by Paul and Kathy Pollack in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Paul's sister Simone, Zachrini Shulamis Bas Shmuel Zichron Levracha, and by the Estherson Mishpacha in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Ludwig Stiefel, Yitzchok Leib Ben Aaron HaKohen, and Hinda Bas Henach Ephraim. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, the Neshamas will have an aliyah and the families a Nechama. So we'll say with that, let's go. So remember again, we are still pulling apart this pasuk from Yechezkel, trying to understand ultimately again what it's referring to, and on a kind of like bigger level, also focusing on the nature of the Amma used in the Beis HaMikdash. Was it an Amma Bas Chamisha? Was it an Amma Bas Shisha? The good news is we begin to see that the answer is both. We begin to see that at certain times of certain things they measured with a 5 Tefach Amma, other times with a 6 Tefach Amma. With that, let's begin. Ella, Cheka Amma. Rather, when the Pasuk says Cheka Amma, what does that refer to? Big of Ha. That refers ultimately to the height of the base of the Mizbeach. Amma Rochav, when it says Amma Rochav, Knisa, that refers to the indentation. Gvula El Svasa Saviv, so we'll say, take a look, Tap of Tzadik Ches. Losh Nahachi Velosh Nahachi. Ultimately, again, what does it mean, Losh Nahachi? Rashi says, Kilomar, Knisasan Dekranos, Iboy Lememer Naim Ba'amas Bas Chamisha, Loich Baslan. So we'll say, when it comes ultimately, again, to the indentation by the horns of the Aron, whether we're dealing with a 5 Tefach Amma or a 6 Tefach Amma does not really matter to us all that much. Kama Havi, and you'll see why in just a moment, because we'll say, how much, what is the height of the Mizbeach? Chamshin v'tamnia, 58 Tvachim. Palgei the Mizbeach Kama Havi, so we'll say, how much is half of the height of the Mizbeach? Esim v'tisha, 29 Tvachim. Mikronos v'at Sovev Kama Havu, from the horns until the Sovev, what was the height? Esim utlasa, 23 Tvachim, Kama B'tzir L'Palgei. We'll say, after taking that out, how much is left till you get to the middle of the Mizbeach? So the Gemara says, Shisa, 6 Tvachim. Now, we'll say, remember again how we work backwards with all of this? Utnan. So we'll say, remember, all of this comes back to the Olas Ha'of. So remember again, Olas Ha'of, the halacha is that it is done on the top of the Mizbeach, but the blood is sprinkled where? On the side of the Mizbeach, specifically, Lamala Michota Sikra, above the red line. So we'll say all of these discussions about where the halfway point of the Mizbeach is determine ultimately again where the Chota Sikra is, which helps us understand how the Kohen did the Avodah from the top of the Mizbeach. Utnan. If the Kohen sprinkled the blood below his feet, in other words, he bent down and he sprinkled it on the side of the Mizbeach while standing on top of the Mizbeach, Afilu Amma Achos, even if he did it an Amma below where he was standing, Kshera. Ultimately, again, it works. So the Gemara says, and I will say, now this makes sense in accordance with the measurements that we just espoused. Dekanami dichsib. So we'll say, furthermore, again, it says, Chayk ha'ama va'ama rochav. Shema mina. So we'll say, indeed, see that these calculations work. The kama ama beinonis. So we'll say, let's go back for just a moment. How much is an ama beinonis? What do we call an average ama? So we'll say, obviously, if you're calling something an ama beinonis, that what does that tell us? What does that tell us? There's something larger, there's something smaller. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yochanan, Shisha Tvachim. An Amma Beinonis is 6 Tvachim. Rabbi Yossi Bar Av, and Af Anan Nami Tanina, Rabbi Meir Omer. So we'll say, so again, remember, if an Amma Beinonis is 6 Tvachim, that must mean that there is also an Amma that is 7 Tvachim, and there is an Amma that is 5 Tvachim. So Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin, Rabbi Yossi Bar Avin said, Af Anan Nami Tanina. We also learn this. Rabbi Meir Omer, Hashulchan Arko Shnei Masar Verachbo Shisha. Rabbi Meir says, the Shulchan ultimately again has a length of 12 Tvachim and a height of 6. Michlal Dahavya Amma Nefisha Mine. Now, both of we can infer from this that what? That Halacha Lamaisa, there is a larger Amma than the one being measured here. Look at Rashi. Michlal, I just lost the place. No, not yet. I'm sorry. No. Well, umit kuri lebenis michlal dikin. Fine. We'll go on. So michlal dahavya aman de fishamine in to which the Gemara says yes, that is correct. There is a larger amo v'hotnan, but we learned the boss is actually quite fascinating. Shtei amos chayu b'shushan. There were two amo measuring sticks in Shushan. Shushan, right? Shushan Abira. People say, what's Shushan Abira? This is amazing. Rashi says, Shushan Abira. Cheder echad haya banui al shar ha-mizrachi shal azara. People say there was a room. Or in fact, as we're going to see, it seems to be, it's not just a room, it seems to be like it was like a turret, like a little bit of a tower, right? A room built on the eastern gate of the Azara. Why was it called Shushan Habira, Shushan the capital city? Umitsuyar Kitavnis Shushan Habira. It was decorated or painted to make it look like Shushan. Okay, we'll discuss this in greater depth in just a moment. So we'll say, so for now we're not worried about Shushan, what we're worried about is as follows. There were two measuring sticks, two Amma measuring sticks in Shushan Habira. Achas al-Kerem Mizrachas Sifonis. One was by the northeast corner. That's where it was positioned. Va'achas al-Kerem Mizrachas Sifonis. One was by Mizrachas Dromis, excuse me. One was by the southeast corner. Shal-Kerem Mizrachas Sifonis. The one measuring stick that was in Mizrachas Sifonis. Yiseira al-Shal-Moshe Chatzi Etzba. It was larger than the Amma of Moshe by a Chatzi Etzba. Now, I will say, how big was the Amma of Moshe Rabbeinu? So Rashi says, Bas Shisha. So Moshe Rabbeinu's Amma was a 6 tefach Amma. This Amma measuring stick that they had in the what we'll call Keren Mizrachis Tzafonis, the northeast corner, it was larger than the Amma of Moshe by a half a finger's breadth. Okay, Shal Kerem Mizrachis Deromis. So we'll say the one in the southeast corner, first wide line, Sadik Ches Amud Aleph, Haisa Yisira LeChatzi Etzba. We'll say ultimately again was larger than that one, a Chatzi Etzba. So we'll say it means that the one in the Mizrachis Deromis, the one in the southeast corner, was essentially a full finger breadth larger than the Amma of Moshe. The one in the first corner was a half a finger breadth larger. The one in the second corner was a half a finger breadth larger than the one in the first corner. So therefore, again, it was a full finger breadth larger than the Amma of Moshe Rabbeinu. Nimtzeis Yisera al Shal Moshe Etzba. Therefore, we'll say it turns out that the Amma in the second corner was a full Etzba larger than what? Than the Amma of Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Gemara says, watch this. V'lama amru achas gedola v'achas kitana. So we'll say, why did they have these two Amma measuring sticks? Why did we have this? This is actually amazing. Kedeshu amonin notlin biktana umachzirin bigidola. In order that literally the craftsman would take using the smaller one and would go ahead and return with the larger one. What does that mean? Look at Rashi. Kedeshu umnin notlin biktana shehe gizbar masna im haumnin. Kach v'kach amos binyan tivnu lebedek habayis b'kach b'kach v'kach damim ba'amos shal Moshe. So we'll say ultimately again when they would contract, so they would contract with the umnin using the smaller amma, but when the umnin would actually build, they would build with what? With the larger amma. So the Gemara says the kach v'kach amos binyan tivnu lebedek habayis u'kach v'kach damim ba'amos shal Moshe. So the Gizbar would contract with the craftsman using the 6 tefach Amma of Moshe Rabbeinu. But ultimately, again, when the craftsman would ultimately build, they would build with the Amma of the Shushan Abira, which ultimately, again, was the Amma of Moshe Rabbeinu, plus an additional finger breadth, a finger width. So the Gemara says, now they did this. Now this is not just simply the Beis Hamikdash's desire to get a better deal. What this was about to say was in order to avoid Me'ila. To avoid Me'ila. Right? Because remember, if the craftsman ends up, quote unquote, building even a little bit less than what was contracted for, it turns out that the contractor is getting benefits from consecrated funds on a personal level. Therefore, ultimately, again, in order to ensure that halacha lemaaseh we run into no situation of mi'ilah, essentially the craftsman, it was understood, you would always overbuild. See, Rabbi Osai, whenever, I guess certain things have not changed, whenever you build for Jewish institutions, never expect to make a profit, right? That's the goal, meaning you're doing it You're doing it for your schar and olam haba, right? You're not doing it as your business venture. Business ventures come elsewhere. When it comes to the Beis Hamikdash, you'll be lucky if you break even, right? That's the goal over here. So Gemara says as follows: Kadesh Yavol Demiila, V'Tarti Lama. He says, "Well, say, why do I need these two measuring sticks?" So the Gemara says, "Chadla Lekaspa V'Dava V'Chadla Binyan." Well, this is actually very interesting. One of them was to go ahead and measure gold and silver, and one was for regular building. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi says v'chad l'dav v'kaspa kishemastin sarfei zav lasos tavla bas chamesh o bas eser ba'ama shamosha osin osa l'midas ha'ama ha'yisira le'chatzi etzba v'lo ba'osa shi'yisira le'etzba. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. So they never used the ama of Moshe Rabbeinu, even though the ama of Moshe Rabbeinu is the basic measure when building the Beis HaMikdash. They would never actually use it. They would always use an amma plus a little in order to avoid any potential issues of mi'ila. So we'll say, if you notice again, however, in Shushan Abira, they had two measures. One was an amma of Moshe plus a half a finger breadth. One was an amma of Moshe plus a full finger breadth. So why do they have both? To which the Gemara says, the half a finger breadth one was for gold and silver. Because since gold and silver, again, are precious metals and are expensive, you don't want the craftsman to be out too much extra. Versus, so that's when they used, ultimately, again, the amma with the extra half a finger breadth. Versus the amma with the full finger breadth, I will say, that was used for actual building. Tanan Hassam, so we'll say, actually, really, really quite amazing. So it turns out, I will say, that you begin to understand that halacha lemaisa, they actually had multiple measurements of amos. It appears that the amma of the Beis HaMikdash is what we call the amma of Moshe Rabbeinu, which was the sixth tefach amma. But in Shushan Abira, they had two additional amma measures. So, but yet, they never used that amma. They never used that amma. What did they use? One of the two amos in that was kept in the chamber of Shushan Habira. Either an amma that had six tefachim plus an extra half a finger breadth, or an amma that had six tefachim plus a full width of a finger breadth. The half a finger breadth ultimately, again, was used for gold and silver. The full additional finger breadth was ultimately used for building. Incredible. Says Gemara Tanan Hasam, Sha'ar HaMizrach Alav Shushan Habira Tzura. So let's remember again, as you saw before, there was a chamber in by the eastern gate that was decorated or painted like Shushan, or had an image of Shushan Habira on it. My timer, I both say, why would we have a picture of Shushan Habira on a chamber of the basement? This is amazing. Rav Chisra of Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, Chadamar Kadei Sheyedu Meheichon Bo. So we'll say, one opinion says that we should know ultimately again where we came from. Where we came from. We'll say, where do we come from? Remember again, it's Koresh, right? It's Cyrus, ultimately king of the Persian Median Empire, who goes ahead and gives the green light to go ahead and begin to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. It's Dariavesh, ultimately, again, who completes it. But it was the Persian Empire which allowed us to go ahead and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. As a sign of Akaras HaTov, ultimately, again, to the Persians. So what do? We go ahead and we decorate a chamber in their honor, that we should know that, ultimately, again, Persia allowed us to rebuild. The other opinion says that we do it, ultimately, again, that it could be, by the way, that the Shushan Habira chamber was actually not commissioned by the Beis HaMikdash. Who is it commissioned by, Rosai? By the king of Persia, right? It was commissioned by the Persian government. Just to say, hey guys, if you're thinking about rebelling, just understand where your bread is buttered, right? Just understand ultimately, again, where you came from, who gave you the permission, so be careful. Now, Rosai, now it's also quite possible that it was the Jews who built this also as their own reminder not to rebel against the Persians. Rabbi Yannis says, this is actually amazing. Le'olam te emos malchus lecha. Both say, this is so incredible. Rabbi Yannis says that the reverence, emo you often means fear, but it doesn't just have to mean fear, it means respect or reverence. The reverence of malchus should always be upon you. So we'll say, if you look at Rashi, actually, no, not yet. So, Shina Emar, so we'll say, this is amazing. So where do we learn this? The aim of Malchus should be upon you, Shina Emar. V'yardu kala v'edacha eila elai, v'shtachavu li leimor. So we'll say, remember again, this is Moshe Rabbeinu speaking to Paro. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to Paro, the time is going to come where your servants are going to run down, prostrate themselves before me, Moshe Rabbeinu, and beg us to leave. Now, interestingly enough, what doesn't Moshe say? Ve'ilu lididei lo ka'amarle. If you notice again, Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't say to Paro, you are going to come running to me and bowing down. Why not? So the Gemara understands that to mean because even Moshe Rabbeinu respected Paro. Even Moshe Rabbeinu ultimately, again, had deference to Paro. So we'll say, what is the Gemara teaching us? The Gemara is teaching us a respect for authority. A respect for authority. Whether I agree with the authority or not is irrelevant. That ultimately, again, there's a concept of respecting the structure or the framework of authority. Even a Moshe Rabbeinu, who is really there to get the Jews out, he's really there as a test of Paro's power. You see the way he speaks to Paro. You see the way he respects Paro. I'll tell you something amazing. You know, the Tzvas Emes comments on this. The Tzvas Emes says that by the Makkah of Tzvardeya, so Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Lamatai atir lecha? When do you want me to go ahead and remove the frogs?" Paro says, "Moshe Rabbeinu leaves the palace in order to pray." So Rashi says, "Why does Moshe Rabbeinu leave the palace in order to pray?" He leaves the palace in order to pray because there was so much Avodah Zorah around there. He didn't want to dive in there. The Tzvas Emes, I don't remember who he quotes, but he says something amazing. He says, "You know why Moshe Rabbeinu left the palace to pray? He didn't want to spiritually offend Paro." Paro doesn't, right? This is not Paro's God. Paro has Avodah Zarah. So if I dive into my God in the midst of your Avodah Zarah, it's going to be a front to your ideology. I have absolutely no interest in offending your ideology or upsetting your theology. And you should live and be well. All I want is my people out there. People say it's incredible, Yisod, to respect the concept of authority, even if you don't agree with it. But just a general derech eretz. The Gemara goes weiter. Rabbi Yochanan comes from here. Rabbi Yochanan says from here. He brings a different source. Same idea, different source. Shneemar v'yad Hashem ha'isa el elio v'yishanis masna v'yaros etni achav ad bo'achal Yisrael. This is amazing. This is by Eliyahu HaNavi. So Eliyahu HaNavi, the pasuk says that the hand of God was upon Elio, and he ran before Achav's chariot until Achav got back to Yisrael. So we'll say, this is actually amazing. So Achav, remember, is unfortunately a terrible, terrible Rasha. But Eliyahu HaNavi saw that the king was traveling unaccompanied. It's not bakavadik for the king to go ahead and travel unaccompanied. So what does Eliyahu do? Eliyahu ran in front of his chariot, like a runner before the king. So let's say, so the prophet of Israel, Eliyahu HaNavi, runs before the king of Israel, Achav, as a demonstration of respect. Because we're both saying, sometimes it's not necessarily just a respect for the person, but it's a respect for the position that the person occupies. So Eliyahu understood, even though Achav is a Rasha, he is Melech Yisrael. He is the king. And so because he is king, ultimately he deserves respect. Incredible. Valei L'tshuva. So I'll say this, by the way, is okay, I'm just not going to even give it words. So we'll say, this is the pasuk from Yechezkel. The pasuk over here is talking about when Mashiach comes, there is going to be a river which flows from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. There's going to be a river that flows from the Holy of Holies. And on the banks of that river that flows from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, all kinds of things are going to grow. And the Navi discusses the various things that are going to grow. So one of the things that it says, the pasuk says, Va'alehu L'tshufa. And its leaves will ultimately, again, be for healing purposes. So we'll say, what kind of healing? Rav Chistev, Rav Yitzchak, Paravdini, Chad Amar Lahatir Pesha Lamalo, V'chad Amar Lahatir Pesha Lamato. One say that it will remedy the upper mouth, one says it will remedy the lower mouth. So we'll say, these are metaphors. The upper mouth means that if you eat of those fruit, if you eat of the fruit of those trees, or the leaves of those trees, even a person who can't speak will be able to speak. Or the other opinion says, even those who are barren. That's a reference ultimately again to the mouth below. Even if a woman is barren, if she eats from those fruit, from those trees, ultimately she'll be able to give birth. Itmar, Chizkiya Amar Lahatir Pe'ilmim, Barkavra Amar Lahatir Pe'akara. So we'll say here they say it more explicitly. Chizkiya says if you partake of those fruit, ultimately again, it gives speech to the mute. And Barkavra says it will go ahead and give children to the barren. Tan Rabbanan, Ilu Ne'emar, so we'll say, so back to Lechem Aponim. Ilu Ne'emar, I didn't mean to say it like that, back to Lechem Aponim. Like we're about to say, back to Lechem Aponim, Baruch Hashem. Tan Rabbanan, Ilu Ne'emar, V'lakach Tesolets V'afisa Osa Shtemus Yechal. So we'll say, now the Gemara is going to go through three different psukim and explain to us how we need three psukim in order to teach us all of the halachos concerning the number and the stacking of the Lechem Aponim. So watch this. So Tan Rabbanan, Ilu Ne'emar v'lakach tesoles v'afisa osa shteimes v'chalos. So if the pasuk would have said, take soles, bake it, make it into 12 loaves, v'samta osam shtayim ma'arachos, and it would have told me to place it in two stacks, v'lo ne'emar sheish, and the pasuk would not have told me that there are 6 loaves per stack, I would have said, ha'yisi omer, achas shal arba v'achas shal shmona. I would have said maybe one stack is 4 loaves, and one stack is 8 loaves. In other words, we'll say, if it would have just said 2 stacks, by telling me 6 loaves per stack, I would have said, okay, you have to have 2 stacks. But lav dafka, how many loaves go in each stack? Lekach ne'emar sheish. Therefore, the pasuk says 6 loaves per stack. If the pasuk would have said, you have to go ahead and create 2 stacks, 6 loaves per stack, but it wouldn't have said 2 stacks, so it wouldn't have said 12, I would have thought, maybe there are 3 stacks of 6 loaves each for a total of 18 loaves. Therefore the pasuk says 12 loaves. Vishesh, the pasuk would have just told me 12 loaves, and it would have said stacks, but it wouldn't have said 2 of 6. I might have thought that it was 3 stacks of 4 loaves each. Therefore, the pasuk says 6 and 2. Sorry, 2 and 6. So what do you see from here? Therefore, what you see from here is you need all 3 psukim to teach me what Rabosai. From all 3 psukim, I gain the 3 following pieces of information. Number 1, there are 12 loaves. Number 2, they are arranged in 2 stacks. And number 3, they are arranged 6 loaves per stack. Beautiful. Hakeitzer. So ultimately, again, how do we set up lechem upon him? No sein shtayim ma'aracho shal sheish sheish. We go ahead and what? We go ahead and we make 2 stacks of 6 loaves each. V'im nosan achos shal arba va'achos shal shmona. But Rabbi says, it's actually very important, halacha l'maisa. If you make 1 stack of 4 loaves and 1 stack of 8 loaves, what's the halacha? Lo yatsa. Rabbi says, you have not fulfilled the obligation. Shtayim shal sheva sheva. Rabbi says, listen to this interesting case. What happens, mamish, like, you know, everybody's got to be meshuga for something. So I'm meshuga for lechem upon him. So for me, I can't stop baking those loaves. So what happens? I decide to make 14, 2 stacks of 7. And I place them on the shulchan, 2 stacks of 7. So what is the halacha, right? What's the status, ultimately, again, of those loaves? So the Gemara says, I'm sorry, I just lost the place. So the Gemara says, Rebbe says, it's okay. We don't care about that top loaf, nor is the 7th top loaf. We just simply view it as if it's not present. Aye, how can you say that? But 1 second, here's the problem. Where does the Lavona go? The Lavona is placed, we already saw, on the top loaf, or at least according to one opinion, on the top loaf. So the problem is as follows. If you tell me that you view, so presumably in this case, where you have 2 stacks of 7, where is the Lavona going? It's going on top of the top loaf. If you tell me that the 7th loaf is as if it's not there, then what happens to the Lavona? To which the Gemara says, Rabbi goes according to his reasoning. What does he say? Do'amar al b'samach. Rabbi will say, Rabbi holds that the word al doesn't have to mean on top of. Rather, al can mean what? Next to. Lav dafka, that the Lavona has to be on top of the lechem. The Lavona just has to be what? Next to the lechem. As long as it's next to the lechem, that's okay. I'm sorry? The oven was in the Azara, courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. Disanyo, Rabbi Omer, Vinasanta ala ma'areches levona zako. You shall go ahead and place on the ma'areches, you shall place on the stack, pure levona, al besamuch. We'll say al just means next to. We'll say, we saw this before. That's why al could mean on top of a loaf, or al can mean next to loaf. So for example, when we saw the lechem aponim configurations, we had opinions who held that what? That there was 2 tefachim of space in between the 2 stacks of loaves. What did you do with that space? Well, it's according to one opinion, that's where you're putting the Lavona. Aye, it says al. Al doesn't have to mean al. Al can mean next to. So the Gemara says, Ata omer al b'samacho inu ala al mamish. You say al means next to. Maybe al means on top of. Kishu omer visakosa al ha'aron esaparochas havi omer al b'samach. So we'll say the raya is, when you say, visakosa al ha'aron esaparochas, you shall place the paroches, the covering on the aron. Rabbi said, this refers to the covering, this refers to the curtain between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now the pasuk says you shall place the paroches on the aron, but al ha'aron, but of course here, what do we know? It doesn't mean you put it on the aron. Rabbi said, where are you putting the paroches? Next to the aron, right in front of the aron. So from here you see ultimately again that halacha l'maisa, Al doesn't have to mean on top of, but rather al can mean next to. Kol hakelim shebamikdash. We'll say turn rabbanon. Kol hakelim shebamikdash arkon laarko shel bayis. We'll say in general with the utensils of the mikdash. So they're you placed the length of the utensil along the length of the beis hamikdash, with one exception. Chutz me'aron. We'll say the one exception to this was the aron, the aron abris. Sha'arko l'rachbo shabayis. So we'll say the way the aron was situated was that it was almost like perpendicular, meaning the width of the aron was placed along the length of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? So like the aron appeared to almost run like perpendicular to the Beis HaMikdash. So this was the length of the Beis HaMikdash. The aron sat like this with the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Gemara says, The kachaya munachin. And I will say, this is how the aron was situated, and this is how the poles of the aron remained as well. I will say, remember again, the poles of the aron were stationed at the width, the sides of the width of the aron. So that when you carry the aron, you do not carry the aron, you know, lengthwise, you carry the aron widthwise. So the aron itself, ultimately, again, its width is situated along the length of the Beis HaMikdash, which means then that the poles of the aron do run along the length of the Beis HaMikdash, sticking out towards the curtain of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Gemara says, listen to this. So where do we know this from? Disanya, Vayarichu Abadim. So we'll say the Pasuk says that the poles were elongated. This Pasuk in Malachim. Vayarichu Abadim. So we'll say, ultimately, again, the poles ran the long way. The poles ran along the length of the Beis HaMikdash. Yochalo Yehu Nogim Beparoches. Amir thought that the poles did not touch the paroches. Talmud Lomar Vayiru. The pasuk says the poles were visible. Ivayiru Yochal Yum Karam Beparoches. So I'll say ultimately again, if it says they were seen, so you might have thought that means that they tear through the paroches. Maybe the poles extend through the paroches, the yotzin, and go out. Which really Mar says Talmud Lomar Lo Yiru Hachutza. Ultimately again, the Gemara says, the Pasuk says that the poles will not be seen on the outside. So we'll say, how does it work? Hakeitza, top of Tzadik Chesam of Beis, Dochkin Uboltin Beparochas. So we'll say, ultimately again, the poles protrude from the parochas, V'domin Kimein Shnei Dade Isha. And we'll say again, the poles kind of protruded from the curtain in the same way of the shape of a chest of a woman, Shene Emar, Tsurar Hamar Dodi Li Bein Shaddai. So we'll say, this is really incredibly fascinating. So that's the image of, we'll say, that ultimately, again, the poles were visible. If you were standing in the Kodesh, you saw the protrusions of the poles from behind the Aron. You did not, obviously they didn't protrude outwards. You could just see them extending into the curtain, but of course not outside of the curtain. So the Gemara says, Uminavan debadav lefusya da aron havu. So this is actually amazing. How do we know that, I don't know that we always think about it this way. I think sometimes we assume that the poles of the aron were arranged along the length of the aron. It's not true. The poles of the aron were situated at the sides of the width. So when you carried the aron, you carried it widthwise going forward. So where do we know that from? Well, it's actually amazing. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Huda, Trey Gabri Ba'amsu Paga Lo Mistagilu. Well, it's amazing. I'll tell you why. Because remember again, the width of the aron itself was amo, really three amas. But I will say, but the idea is, in the Gemara saying over here, that if the poles were situated along the length of the aron, remember you need four people to carry the aron, right? Two on each side. There would not be enough room for two people to stand next to each other on the two opposite sides of the pole if it was arranged along the length of the aron. I don't know if I'm being clear on this or not. If you were to put the poles along the length, that means the two people on each side would only have a very limited amount of space in between the two poles. There would not be enough space for two people. Therefore, by definition, the poles had to be arranged along the width in order to give two people on each side the ability, the room, to be able to carry it. So the Gemara says, how do you know that four people carry the aron? So the Gemara says, Pasuk says, the kahasim plural will carry it, that's two. No se hamikdash, those who carry the base hamikdash or the mikdash, nami trei. So we'll say, so the fact that it uses this ribui in both of these contexts, ultimately again, means two and two. No se hakasim is two. No se hamikdash is also two. Tan Rabbanon. So we'll say, so first of all, it's just, no, incredible. So first of all, you're beginning to see, first of all, the idea, it's also fascinating, that when you went into the Kodesh, obviously it only applies to the Kohanim, but when you go into the Kodesh, even though it's only the Kohen Gadol who gets to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim once a year, but every single Kohen was made ever aware of the presence of the Aron every single day by seeing the poles protrude out into the curtain itself, which is amazing. Number two, the idea that the Aron is not carried lengthwise. The Aron is carried widthwise, which also means, remember, the Kruvim also faced each other along the length of the Aron. So when you were carrying the Aron, I mean, the Aron was covered when you carried it, but when you carried the Aron, essentially what you would see was the profile of the Kruvim. That's what you would see, the side profile of the Kruvim when the Aron was being carried. Okay, good. So the Gemara goes weiter. Tan Rabbanon, this is amazing. Asar Shulchanos Asa Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech made 10 Shulchanos. We'll say this is actually quite amazing. Even though there's only an obligation for one Shulchan, ultimately, again, Shlomo HaMelech made 10. He made extra Shulchanos in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, Bepashtos, only one of them was actually used, but he made these extra utensils to make the Beis HaMikdash even more beautiful. Shneamar, Bayah Shulchanos Asara, Vayonach Behecho, Chamisham Yamin Bechamisham Yismol. He put them in the Shulchan, made 10 of them, 5 on the left, 5 on the right. Vim Tomer Chamisham Yamin HaPesach, Bechamisham Yismol HaPesach. Maybe you'll say 5 were on the right of the entranceway, 5 on the left of the entranceway. Imkein, that can't be why. Because Matzinu Shulchan Bedarom. Ultimately, again, it would turn out then that you would have some of the tables in the south. And I will say the Pasuk explicitly says that the Shulchan is to be placed in the north. Ella, so how were these 10 Shulchanos arranged? Shamosha Be'emtsa, so Moshe Rabbeinu Shulchan, meaning the Iker Shulchan, was placed in the middle on the northern side. And Chamish Miyamino V'Chamish Mismolo. The 5 additional ones, 5 of them are put on the right, 5 of them are put on the left. Tan Rabbanan, so we'll say similarly again, Esther menorahs, also Shlomo. Shlomo also made 10 menorahs. So we'll say, first of all, you understand, by the way, what this tells you about the incredible wealth of the empire of Klal Yisrael. Right? So we'll say those words again soon. The empire of Klal Yisrael. Right? You see the wealth of the empire of Klal Yisrael. Remember again, these menorahs are solid gold. Solid gold. So to make one is incredible enough, but Shlomo is making 10 of them. The Shulchan is also, remember, the Shulchan is wood plated with gold, but it's still a lot of gold. So Shlomo HaMelech made 10 menorahs. Shene Emar, Vayasas HaMenorahs HaZov, Eser Kimishbat, Vayitein Bahechom, Chamisha Mion Vechamisha Mismol. Same thing, Rabbi Hussein. Shlomo HaMelech made 10 menorahs out of pure gold. He put it in the Hechol, 5 on the right, 5 on the left. Vim Tomer, Chamisha Miyamin HaPesach, Chamisha Mismol HaPesach. So maybe you'll say that what? 5 of them are on the right, 5 of them are on the left of the entrance of the Beis HaMikdash. Imkein, Matsinu Menorah B'Tzafen. We'll say if that's the case, then it turns out that what? We find the menorah ultimately again in the north. Vatora Amra, and the Pasuk says, Ve'es HaMenorah Nochach HaShulchan. The Pasuk says that ultimately what? The menorah is opposite the Shulchan. Ella, so how would you situate it? Ella Shemoshe Moshe Ba'emsa. Rather, I will say ultimately again, the menorah was placed on the menorah was placed, right, Moshe Rabbeinu's menorah was in the middle, and Chamisha Miyamina V'Chamisha Mismala, and there were 5 menorahs on the left of it, 5 menorahs on the right of it. So Tani Chadda, so we'll say one Brice that teaches us, so first of all, just amazing. So first of all, do you see that the Iker utensil, meaning the major menorah, the used menorah, and the used Shulchan, meaning the one that was used, those were placed in the middle, and the additional 10 were situated around it. Tani Chada, Michatzi Bais Velifnim, Hayumunachin. So we'll say, so one Pasuk says that Michatzi Bais Velifnim, so Rashi says, Munachin Kala Shulchanos, Ve'ein Echamen Mechatzi Menachitzel Nitzal HaPesach. So we'll say, so the Pasuk over here says that the Shulchanos were placed halfway into the Beis HaMikdash. Halfway into the Beis HaMikdash. The Tani Chada, Mishlusha Bais Velifnim. And one says, no, they were placed one third of the way into the Beis HaMikdash. So which one is it? Was it a half or was it a third? So which one is the Lokashia? Everything depends on how you measure the area of the Beis HaMikdash. Marka Choshev Beis Kodesh HaKadoshim. One includes in the measurement of the Beis HaMikdash the area of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in which case, again, the Shulchanos were halfway into the Beis HaMikdash. So the Gemara says, Vadi Echel. Marloka Choshev Beis Kodesh HaKadosh Vadi Echel. The other opinion does not include the area of the Kodesh HaKadoshim in the measurement of the Echel, in which case, what? In which case, the Shulchanos were only placed one third of the way into the Beis HaMikdash. Tan Rabbanon, Mizrach Ma'ariv Hayu Munachim Divrei Rebbe. So we'll say Rebbe says that the Shulchanos, the tables, when they are arranged in the Beis Hamikdash, so they faced in one direction towards Mizrach. So in other words, one part towards east, one part towards west. In other words, they were arranged on an east-west axis. The Hainu Arko, the Arko Shalbai. So Chabosai means that they ran along, the length of the menorah was placed along the length of the Beis HaMikdash. That is Mizrach Umayrev. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Safon V'Darom. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says, no, they were arranged in a north-south axis. So Chabosai, first wide line, Tzadik Ches Amadeis, my time at the Rebbe, where does Rebbe get this from? That it's east and west. Gamra Miminorah, he learns out Shulchan from Menorah. Ma Menorah Mizrach Ma'ariv. Av Halkanai Mizrach Ma'ariv. Just like the Menorah, we'll say, was arranged on an east-west axis. So to the Shulchan was arranged on an east-west axis as well. U Menorah Gufa Menorah, we'll say, we already know that Menorah was arranged east-west. Midichsiv Bener Ma'aravi, we'll say, the fact that it's when the Torah speaks about the Ner Ma'aravi, which is what we call the western light, Ya'aroch Oso Aron Lifnei Hashem. The pasuk says he shall arrange it before Hashem. Now we'll say, now what does that mean? So the Gemara says, Michlal Dekulu Lav Lifnei Hashem. So we'll say the fact that the Ner Ma'aravi is positioned in a different way, i.e., towards, well, right, we'll see Lifnei Hashem before God, indicates to us ultimately again that the other candles are not arranged that way. Now what does this mean? Look at Rashi just a moment. Midichsiv Bener Ma'aravi Lifnei Hashem. Dichsiv Ya'aroch Oso Aron Lifnei Hashem. Demashma also lifnei Hashem, bein achar lifnei Hashem, alma chadhu dahavi klapi ma'ariv. So we'll say one of the lights of the menorah was arranged towards the west. Letzad beis kodesh hakadoshim, alma mizrach ma'arav munachim, v'achitzon shel tzad ma'arav kari. So we'll say ultimately the menorah must have been arranged ultimately again in a north southwest. In a mizrach ma'arav, in an east west way. V'achitzon shel tzad ma'arav kari ne ma'aravi, and the outer candles called an er ma'aravi, arranged with ne'ashem. And if you want to say ultimately again that the menorah was arranged in a north-south axis, then ultimately again all of the candles would go ahead and be arranged facing Lifnei Hashem. Rabbi Elazar Shimon, my time, where does he get his opinion? Rabbi Elazar Shimon holds that ultimately again the menorah is arranged tzafon v'darom, is arranged east-west. Where does he get that from? So the Gemara says, my time, a gomar me aron. He learns it out from the aron. Ma aron safon v'darom, af hani namit safon v'darom. Just like the aron ultimately again was arranged, Rabosai, east-west, north-south, so to the menorah was arranged north-south. The Rebbe nami ligmar me aron. So why doesn't Rebbe learn out the position of the shulchan ultimately from the aron? Donin chutz mi chutzvin, donin mi bifnim. We would rather learn out the utensils that are outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim from other utensils that are outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So I'd rather learn out the shulchan from the menorah than learn out the shulchan from the aron. Vein donin chutz mi bifnim. Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, ligmar mi menorah. Rebbe Elazar, Rebbe Shimon, why don't you learn it out from menorah? Amar lachan aron, why do you learn out shulchan from aron? Why don't you learn shulchan from menorah? Amar lachan, menorah gufa safon v'daram haba, mancha. Because he will say that the menorah itself was also situated safon v'daram, was also situated on a north-south axis. Elo haksiv yaruch osa aron ubanav. But the pasuk says that ultimately it will be arranged by Aaron and his sons, the mitzadeit lu atzdude, to which the Gemara says, Roshay, if you look at Rashi, it's Rashi on the right of the picture, mitzadeit lu atzdude, la'olam tzafon v'darom, the menorah was normally arranged from north-south, va'afidu hoch ileka elechad klape ma'ariv, but really there was only one candle that faced towards the west, va'ainu emtsoi, this refers ultimately to the middle candle, that's the image of Rashi over there, so shepia psila klape ma'ariv, because ultimately again the wick itself faced the west, usharap silos mitzudados pien klape emtsoi, and the other candles faced, the other wicks faced towards the west. So that's the image over here of Rashi, and that image, the middle candle is ultimately facing west, and the other wicks are facing towards the middle. The sanyo el mul pnei ha-menorah ya'ilu shivas haneros. The pasuk says again, opposite the menorah shall the seven candles burn. Ultimately, this teaches us, Rabbi Sayyid, in the Beis HaMikdash, all of the candles, all of the outer candles, we'll call the outer six, faced where? Towards the middle. Rabbi Nosan Mikan Shem Tsoi Meshubach. And I will say, from here we learn that what? That literally, again, the Emtsoi is Meshubach. That ultimately, again, the middle of anything has a shevach. The middle of anything ultimately, again, has a certain praise. But Rashi says, "Legabe shalosh akarim b'sefer Torah b'sheni mechamishi v'amirim seches megillah ein pochsim asar p'sukim v'kamer Rabbi Nosan." So he gives another example. This Rabbi saying that halacha l'maisa, the Gemara Maseches Megillah says that on Mondays and Thursdays, when you lane, you can't lane less than 10 psukim. And what's the proper way to go ahead and order those psukim? 3, 4, 3. Why? Because the emtsai is meshubach. Rabbi say, from where do we see that the middle is meshubach? We learn that from the menorah. Because Rabbi say, and this indeed, by the way, is how the Rambam paskins, that the menorah itself, the middle wick, faced west, towards the Aron, faced west. The other wicks faced in towards the middle wick. Ultimately, again, from here we see the Emtsoi is Meshubach. So we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up in Meretz Hashem at the Bishlama, four lines up from the bottom. I'll share with you a short idea from the parasha.